just like the guitar, like clean guitar, you're running a 50-foot speaker cable or guitar cable, I mean, you need a buffer pedal. Mm-hmm. And it's like a clean boost is what they call it, but it's just basically to boost the signal. That could be the difference between them.
Gotcha.
I don't use them very often.
Yeah.
People tell me I should, but I don't give a fuck.
Dude, how you're talking about your knowledge of that is, it's very similar to how I and like a lot of other like developers talk about programming. Like there's so much to know. There's too much to know as far as like all the different tools and technologies and techniques that a lot of times you're just like, well, this is the mic I use on kick drums for like the clicking sound or whatever. Mm-hmm. Or you're just like, well, this is the software library I use to do this one thing. I don't really know how it works. I use this one thing out of it and it works really well. So yeah. Like it's a tool in the toolkit. I can't understand everything from first principles, but it's like, I don't know. It's like, I don't know. There's a lot of tools out there, but
there's a
you
lot
got you
got
to just use them.
There.
You can't learn, like, you know, people want to learn Photoshop 100% before they get in it and start editing. It's like that type of attitude. It's like you got to get your hands dirty. You're not going to know everything. You'll figure it out over time. But, you know, you got to...
The shitty part is there's people who are really smart and really good at what they do. And the thing is they like to tell people who are just starting out, the people you're talking about, they like to tell them in the audio world... They like to tell them, oh, you're a beginner. You don't need to figure out what side chaining is yet. You need to figure out what balance is. You need to figure out what this and this and your early basics are. Yeah, that's true. But it's excitement that keeps us going.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a shit ton of people that I listen to on podcasts and interviews, and I respect them highly, but I don't respect the way that they treat people who just get started in this. And like
are kind of elitist almost.
But there's also some guys that I know who are really good and are just as good as those people. They're just not in the spotlight. And they're just like, you know, I don't talk about people like that. I don't tell people that. I don't make people to feel like they're stupid just because they're trying to figure something out that they heard about. Like, oh, I heard about this and I heard about this. And like, well, that's way later on down the road. No, it's okay. Let them get excited. Mm-hmm. Let them get excited right now. That's the whole reason why we do this. Mm-hmm. It's the only reason why it's a passion. That's the reason why we love doing it for multiple periods of time with a shit ton of fails.
Well, and there's an immense practicality to that. Because once again, I'm comparing this to my experience, like, of coding and learning how to code. Like, you can't just go to the documentation and just read the documentation and learn. Like, you're going to have to take it bite by bite of what's exciting to me and also relevant to my learning.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to try out projects or, like, you know, on your side of things, like, work with songs and just try and remix the same songs multiple times. Yeah. And try things that you know you won't release, but you're just working on a certain skill or want to prove that you can work with a certain technology. I don't know, like, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm. It's yeah, and it's like, it's just, man, at the end of the day, we're just trying to make something that sounds really dope, that gave us some sort of emotion, that like when you hear that first riff for the first time that made you feel that wonderful way, that you're like, yes, that's the next part in this song. Like, we're just chasing that feeling. We're just drug addicts chasing a high, but without the drug part.
Right.
Well, yeah.
But it's, I don't know. There's so many ways that we can sit here and try to, like, explain what it is that we're feeling during the process. But to tell you the truth, it's not big enough. It doesn't. You can try to tell somebody about it, but it's not going to make them feel the way that you feel in that moment when every single person's like energy and frequency is aligning with each other and everybody is making magic. I mean, I'm not going to mention what band this is, or can I say that it there's a what? Band there's a band I might have recorded recently.
Well, mean, we're gonna talk about it in detail on another episode, but okay. You know, we once did it's record released, with Michael.
We did, yeah, we did recently. Record with Michael and it but, thoroughly enjoyed it.
Yeah. So I mean
but thank you.
There's very I'm not saying that there's very few times because I've worked with a lot of really talented people and there's a lot of people that I feel like most people don't give enough credit to that I felt like were really good musicians that I recorded and like deserved more praise, but that's another story. But there's few projects that I've done and definitely Sledge is one of them. Sledge is like,
oh yeah.
Sledge is one of the bands that showed me what real musicians like really, really
like serious, mm-hmm. thoughtful musicians.
Like, hey, we're coming to you to record, but like, check out, we already have our vision set. And it's like, we need you to help facilitate this process of getting it out to the world. That's basically what it came to. And there was a lot of technical, technical stuff that we needed to get done. Mm-hmm. And, you know, shout out my boy Kramer, my right hand fucking guy. Like, he has been my right hand dude for like all of the big, big projects. And,
yeah, it's stressful. Kramer for me. Is a craftsman.
Yeah,
yeah.
Behind the keys.
Kramer is the fucking shit. Like, without him, Slamnasium wouldn't have gotten to where it was. But I had to learn that I needed to outsource at an earlier point. Like, I did everything myself for the longest. But you know what I mean. Like, once Kramer stepped in and helped and took some load off, I was able to stay creative in the most important part. Because as somebody, I don't consider myself a producer. I just want to consider myself a temporary band member. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And but I'm not a decision maker. Like, I'm in here with you guys to understand the vision and listen to you guys talk amongst yourself about the vision and be able to try to incorporate that as it goes into the computer. Yes, there's mics and cables and stands and there's treatment and, you know, there's EQs and compressors and there's all this technical stuff like going straight into the computer, but it starts with what they're capturing first. And Sledge was one of the first bands that really, really opened my eyes to, like, it was just such an amazing experience. Like, I was a fan of that band. I was moshing for that band every chance that I got. Mm-hmm. And then Kevin was like,
hey man, we want to record some songs and stuff.
And I was like, let's fucking go. I was like, let's fucking do it. And I was like, who's doing vocals? And he was like, I don't know. I was like, well, what are we doing? We're doing Gruff. I was like, is that it? He's like, yeah, we're only doing Gruff. And then we did Gruff, never released. And then a year later, we did Gruff again. And I want to say you...
Yeah, there was a version of it that I was on, but...
They I don't tried think out it ever. A couple things.
What is Gruff? What?
Gruff it's a song. Is, what is the original name?
Fuck, I forgot what song it is now.
I don't know their fucking original. Isn't it one of like Deftown and Gruff and like
isn't it
others.
One of the songs now though that's on their most recent EP? Mm-hmm. Yeah,
Gruff is the first song on the new EP.
Yeah, the first one.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Now there's a name, and the name pertains, you know, to the music and the lyrics, but that's not what I know it by.
Right.
Like, we tried recording with together in my very primitive stage of my recording and producing. And, you know, I want to say James Belial was playing bass at the time, too. It was just, you know, a short period of time. Mm-hmm. But, like, once it came time to do this EP, I had felt like they were just completely evolved versions of them, like, as musicians.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I always knew that I loved Colton's lyrics and his vocals, but until I heard them for the first time during recording, that's whenever I realized how much of a fucking gangster ass poet this motherfucker is. Mm-hmm. Like, I could read his shit like all day long. I could read.
That was definitely the vibe of our podcast with Colton as well.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah. I forgot. I did.
We got super philosophical. It was cool. I liked it.
It's because, man, those lyrics are so intense. And I mean,
yeah,
you don't think about crying during moshing, but until I read the lyrics of some of the songs, you know, from the first EP and then that two song thing that they released, like, I realized how much hell one person can go through and still make it out on top like Colton has.
Yeah.
That kicks ass.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's the kind of shit that I love. And once it came time, like, we knocked out the instruments. It wasn't quickly. You know, we took our time. We definitely, like, we knocked out drums. It was most important part. It was, like, making sure that Kevin was happy with his process. And then as soon as we finished that, we stepped in and did guitar. Jacob Faye did it. And one of the things I completely respect outrageously was, even though that Eric Claxton wrote the riffs, he told Jacob Faye, he's like, I want you to record them. He goes, because some things you can play better than I can. And of course, Jacob Faye the whole time is just like, no, man, maybe you should try it. He's like, no, stop. He's like, you're going to do it. He's like, you're way better at playing this riff than I am. Just do it. He's like, no, I think you should try it. And then, you know, Claxton will grab it and do some things. But every single part was, everybody was like, who's the best person out of the band to nail this part? And they were like, automatically, you're elected. So that means that they cared.
Yeah.
And to have people care like that going into the process, it's like, you don't think about it at the time, but thinking back on it, it was like, it was destined for success from the beginning because every single person was passionate about it.
Yeah. They and just so, want, they were all on the same wavelength of what they wanted. The
everybody was vibing on the same frequency.
So
you know what I mean?
I feel like it's hard to find bands like that. That and I mean, I've heard about that method a lot.
Well, you know, I recorded one just recently.
No, man, we're not talking about that. Here, okay. I want to go back to the beginning though, because and I don't even know this myself, but you've basically bootstrapped a small business, a small studio out of your house.
Yeah.
Like, how? When did this all start?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
How did you
this? Take us way back.
Yeah, take us back.
Or maybe it wasn't.
This way is back. The time we need the movie intro where it's like. Okay. I don't know. I didn't know anything about recording. I was living in a small, like, bumfuck nowhere fucking town in the middle of Oklahoma.
What town?
Paul's Valley.
Paul's Valley, Oklahoma.
Yeah. Now you got to think about this in the, like, in the trilateral, like, little triangle. There's Paola, Paul's Valley, and then there's Stratford. It's like a triangle.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a...
Is it like the Bermuda Triangle, basically?
Pretty much, but except
like,
whenever
people go in and they don't fucking go out.
Well, you drive into this trailer park on the east side of town, and as you pull in, it's like, you know, driving into water, and it's a whole nother form of white trash.
Oh shit.
You know what I'm saying?
And is it evolved or devolved?
It's devolved. We're going down in dimensions, boys. But it was a terrible place. I was the only person out of all my friends besides one other person that played guitar. I was passionate about rock music, rock sounding music.
Yeah,
everybody was listening to rap, you know. It's my teenage years. I put guitar down and, like, I just started doing hood rat shit with my friends. We were getting a shit tons of trouble, a shit ton of cop situations, and a shit ton of, like, just bad situations.
I hear that a lot from people that, like, come from small towns.
Yeah.
Especially, that's like, what else are you going to do? Like, young guys, especially young men, are so reckless.
So what I did was I had met this girl named Hannah. And, you know, I was like 16. Like, my parents had just got a divorce. They split up. I'm living by myself in this town. And I had met her at this party. And we started going out. I met her sister and her sister's boyfriend. Now, her sister's boyfriend, this is the most key part. His name is Dustin Ballard. He's the guy who introduced me to the darker side of music. Like, I was strictly just a kid that only heard mainstream as a child. And then as soon as I was
like
old enough...
Like, radio rock.
Yes. And as soon as I was old enough to, like, have friends and shit, I was grouped up, clicked up, doing hood rat shit. I mean, it was... We were constantly getting in trouble. Mm-hmm. Then, like, I had met this girl and then met, you know, her sister's boyfriend. And he had a giant case full of VHS tapes and DVDs of, like, Family Values Tour, like, Nine Inch Nails DVDs, all the Slipknot DVDs, any kind of new metal DVD, he had it. And nice. I just used to go over into his room while he was at work, and I'd go through his DVDs, and I'd watch every single one of them I pulled out. I'd pull out a new one every single day, and I was just learning. And he had a white Ibanez sitting in the corner. So I was like, I want to play that motherfucker one day. Mm-hmm. So I started playing, like, Enter Sandman. Like, you know, I had put guitar down for, like, 4 years. Mm-hmm. I never thought I was going to pick it back up again. And then I started I started learning every Slipknot song. And that's where I built the strength in my arms. And I was working at Walmart at the time, and we got this new guy working with us, this guy named Brandon. And he had a recording program on his computer. Now, we're going to go back in time and talk about old recording softwares that used to be free on these computers with, like, some Line 6 pedals that you could buy, like the Red Bean and stuff like that.
Yeah,
they used to have this program called Sonoma Works. I want to say
Works.
So basically it's like it's the most shittiest version of a DAW ever. It's like
shittier than a what was
it's
it?
Like
wait, a DAW?
A DAW, DAW, like a digital audio workstation.
Oh, okay.
So like it's the
Audacity.
Yes, yeah.
Is it like so or it's like worse than Audacity?
It's way worse than Audacity.
Okay. Dude, I recorded my acoustic album on Audacity.
But nice. See at 16 I start or 17 probably at this time. I had done enough hood rat shit to gather some money to fucking buy a computer. I had a computer. It was the first stimulus check from Bush.
Dang.
Right? Whoa, you got the Bush
stimmy? I got the Bush stimulus check, bro.
I didn't even know there was a Bush
stimmy. There was a Bush stimulus check for $250, bro, and I was balling. I was balling.
That's sick. $250 was worth considerably more.
Also, my rent at my house was also $250 a month. That's how shitty this house was. So I bought this computer, and my buddy showed me how to torrent.
Nice.
Hell and yeah. I was off to the fucking races. I was like, the world is mine. Fuck everybody.
Yes.
I was like, I'm going to start buying stocks in fucking Pirate Bay one day if that ever becomes a thing. But that I don't think that became a thing, did it?
No. If you want to buy stock in Pirate Bay, just buy Bitcoin.
Just buy Bitcoin.
It all goes back.
So basically what you did is you just put in these little MIDI beats, and it had a pre-generated drum kit. There was no changing anything. And there was like a record channel and record channel. You could only record guitars mono. You couldn't pan them. It sounded like butt. But you know what? I was recording my first butt rock, and I was excited.
That's so cool.
And there were some beats that I was able to do the halftime, the parts, so it sounded like fucking breakdowns. And I was like, fuck
you. Yeah, okay, I see.
So like I just slowed the tempo down a lot, and it made certain parts
sound
like
breakdown. And then made it halftime.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, okay.
So that was like how I just started like piecing it together. And then like I turned 20, and I moved to Lawton, and that's whenever I met my kid's mom, and I started meeting a lot of people over in Lawton because I was like, I got to get out of Paul's Valley. There was too many things that were going on that were happening. If I would have stayed, I would have ended up like dead or in prison. You know what I mean? Like they say in the movies, I would have died if I would have stayed there. But it was just a bad situation I needed the fuck out of. So I moved to a bigger town, and I was like, yes, this is how I'm going to start a band. I was like, I'm going to start a band with some friends, and we're going to write stuff like Killswitch Engage, and it's going to be awesome. And that's not what happened. Like, I ended up, like, trying out for a band there. It was at the time, I can't even remember the name, but it was, if anybody is listening to this, it was pre-Handguns and Debauchery days.
Oh, shit.
It was before, it was the band name before that. Do y'all know who I'm talking about?
I don't know who Handguns and Debauchery was.
I don't know if they're listeners, but you know, I'm not trying to throw shade. But you know, we're familiar. We played a show with them back in the day, I think.
Kramer played.
Didn't Kramer they? Was in Handguns and Debauchery. I think Austin's just figuring this out.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we have kind of an inside joke maybe about that band.
So I thought they were like as they were just the first musicians I met, and I thought they were like, the only band that I knew of from Lawton that were doing like breakdowns. Now this is before I met the Reese, Mr. Reese's Pieces himself. This is before In Honor. This was a Hav Shalom days.
This is some Oklahoma history.
This is Oklahoma history. This was Altus
Primal.
This is Ching Fest. This is
just some of the darkest places of
God.
Oklahoma,
what was that hardcore
metal
band that played there? It's like something, three little word name or three. Anyways, it was a band that played the show there. It's crazy fights. This is whenever I got introduced to a lot of the people I'm friends with now. Like, this is back when James Mace was like listening to like deathcore, and he like introduced me to like slam, years ago, and he doesn't even realize it. Just adding me to random shitty music, you know, Facebook groups that were making funny memes. Mm-hmm. That like he would add me to them, and like we would just like we would talk about like Oceano and shit. you know what I mean? Yeah. This is many, many, many moons ago.
Like 2011.
No, 2000. Bro. Probably 2011.
2010.
Late 2010.
Yeah, that's around when I met Mace.
Because my kid was born in 2010. And like we had moved back to Lawton because we had moved to Paul's Valley so my sister could help us. And then we moved back. And that's whenever I just started meeting everybody. And like I started meeting all the scary people from the Oklahoma hardcore scene from Oklahoma City. Like I remember Anthony Leon beat my ass at Ching Fest one year, and then like we hung out back. I want to say it might have been No Luck, the band that was playing. But I started meeting all these people, and I remember one of the people that inspired me to get into recording music was Richard doing the In Honor EP. And I was. Man, I remember when I went over to Richard's house to buy the In Honor EP that had came out on printed CDs. I remember I drove over there to meet Kevin. And, man, that was a long time ago. And I remember seeing his setup, and I was like, dude, this is so cool. I was like, I want to do this. Mm. And then, man, I never really thought about it. Yeah, Richard was probably one of the first people to really inspire me to start recording bands and recording locally. Mm-hmm. So then from the very beginning, it became a thought process for me. It was, I don't want to do this for a business. I want to do this because these bands kick ass. And if I can learn how to make music sound good, mm-hmm. I would be helping them out with, like, you know what I mean? Making whatever they're doing sound good. And like, I get to hang out with like a badass fucking band for a week.
Right.
And that was like the very primitive thought process behind it. And then it evolved. Well,
and this isn't just like, you're not just talking. Like, this is very, like, we've seen this first and foremost. Yeah, like, yeah. You charge much lower than you could, I think, in a lot of ways. And you've raised your prices.
You
continue to raise your prices. But, you know, like, you cover like a lot. You make sure the band is comfortable. Like, you're genuinely in it for the love of it, and it's very obvious.
And I want it to stay that way. Mm. And everybody's telling me and asking me, like, when are you going to quit your main job? You know, when are you going to stop painting cars and start doing this full time? Be 100%. Probably won't ever quit painting cars. Mm. Yeah. I'll probably do this forever, so that I can continue to treat bands differently than most producers and engineers. That's literally my whole reason for doing it. Like I was talking about earlier, I'm so sick of people who being elitist in the, you know, in the producing side of the music industry. Everybody's always bitching.
Yeah.
I'm like,
that's what it seems.
I'm like, why don't y'all fucking chill? This was about it's music about at building. One point in time, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, there is nothing cooler to me than to record. All right, hear me out. Record a band, record their songs. I headbang through the whole fucking process, you know, just nod my head, just like, this is fucking sick. And then that band plays those same songs live. Mm-hmm. And it's even more powerful whenever I see a band play the song that I recorded with them live for the first time. It's just, it's a whole nother frequency. It's a whole nother feeling. Mm-hmm. It's a whole nother emotion. And knowing that you were part of that process, but you speak about it to yourself silently. It's not something that you boast about.
Right.
That's out of ego. Mm-hmm. It's more of just like, I'm literally doing all of this for just like personal fulfillment.
Yeah.
And,
well, it's amazing because you're like the one, or you're the person like out of few that gets to hear it in both of those ways.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I mean, that's super special and super unique and,
but
it's really cool.
I mean, I had to learn though. So the whole time that I lived in Lawton up until it was the year that Trump got elected for the first time, I had just moved to Oklahoma City, and I remember seeing all the assholes with the fucking flags. And it was that year that I moved to Oklahoma City. So whatever year that was, 4 years ago.
Four or five, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. 4 years ago. Oh, 4 years ago. And so from 2011 up until that point, and I moved to Oklahoma City, I was just recording myself. There is shit tons of demos of all my early music that I hope to God never hears the light of day. It's because it was all tests.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? It was just like test songs, test riffs, test mixing, and it sounded like ass. I fucking listen to any of it now, and I'm just like, nah. Like, I refuse to listen to my main band's first EP just because of how terrible the mix is. But I was so proud of it at the time, and I thought it was the coolest thing ever.
Yeah.
Eventually, I got to the point to where it wasn't like, I think it sounds good, but it sounds like shit, to where now it's like, I think it sounds good, and it kind of sounds good. Like, it's just, that's basically what's changed. And it's just practice and just continuing. And so once I moved to Oklahoma City, started hanging out with a bunch of more people, because I still live in the same house.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm just right up the street from 89th Street. So I was able to go there a lot more often. Dakota Whiteside introduced me to Omen. And this was very early Omen.
Mm-hmm.
And
way back in the day.
Way back in the day. This is back when Frosty had long hair. This is when they had a different...
Skylar was 17.
Skylar was like...
18 or
He still had like one handcuff on. He was the most angry, scariest dude I had ever met in the pit. You know what I mean? Mm. I was just like, this dude's terrifying. And then like Dakota Whiteside was like, dude, you should check them out. And then I don't even know who I hit up first, but I finally got to the point to, after tons and tons of mixing myself and releasing my own songs and then releasing, you know what I mean, so much music for 10 years almost, I got to the point where I was like, okay, I want to try this with another band.
Mm.
To where that, like, that's a whole nother comfort zone that you step out of.
Yeah.
Like, to, okay, it's not just my vision anymore. Okay, now I'm going to try to help facilitate somebody else's vision onto a recording. Mm-hmm. And that's a whole another, man, that's like changing lifestyles, you know what I mean?
Right, yeah.
But it's like, it's very scary, and it can be.
I'm sure it's nerve-wracking.
It was fucking nerve-wracking. Because
you've got other brains in there, too.
And like, none of us knew what the hell we were doing. Like, I mean, we were just, we all had a basic idea on how to try it out and do it. And so we did it. And then I did Omen's EP, and then I did Agony's first EP. And then I just started recording my own bands. My bands started releasing more music, and I was like, okay, now I can use all of this that I've learned from these first two bands and then try it with my bands. And it's like, everything is a stepping step process. It's like you jump up a step.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there is, and it doesn't matter which direction that you're jumping up.
Yeah.
You're still jumping up, like, right, as long as you're going up. So
see, and we were just talking about this, well, last episode.
Yeah.
Just like for me, I just call it and think of it as iterations. Mm-hmm. And like, that's such a powerful mental model for me now. And no one really expressed that to me, that like, that's how you make real things in the world, is it's iterations, it's coats of paint, it's prototype, you build it, then you build a better one.
It's all part of the process.
Yeah, experimenting, and then you combine those experiments to a better version. And
how failing can be a
God, man. Failing is the most important part.
And failing into, and that's such a trite thing, such a cliche, like, you're failing into success or whatever, but it's really true. Like, you have to be willing to go through those iterations, through those projects falling apart, House of Cards falling down. You got to go through that 100 times.
Not every band that I have recorded, you know, or worked with, not every band was a perfect situation.
Right. Yeah.
Like,
right.
I can sit here as a man and say that, like, there was a couple of times that there was a recording process that didn't finish. And I hate that.
Mm-hmm.
I hate that I didn't finish.
Mm.
But it got to a point to where it was out of my hands.
Mm-hmm.
Or there was something going on in my world around me for the first one that I needed to learn from. And it was a hard fail. It was a hard fail. I really, really wanted to work with this band. And it was basically, I jumped into the deep end of the pool before I was ready.
Mm, gotcha.
And I wasn't ready. And I completely understand that I wasn't ready. I've had conversations with the people in the bands, you know, like, there's no hard feelings at all.
Right, right.
We just understand that we've all grown since that point. Mm-hmm. So we're just like, dude, we're not going to hold grudges. It was something that was just like, it is what it is.
Mm.
And then there was another time with another band that I shouldn't have. I tried to work outside of my comfort zone, and which is okay. You can always try to push your own boundaries, you know, jump out of your comfort zone and see what you're capable of doing. But there was one situation with the band that this band was not, they were not the kind of band that I should have worked with. Gotcha. There was a lot of elements that they wanted in their music that was not, it was not suited for the genre. There was clean singing and they want ping snare. And it's like, it's not going to work. I mean, I mean, I'm not saying it's not going to. I mean, depending on how excited you are, anything could sound awesome, but it's like, listen, bro, maybe this wasn't a great idea. And there was communication issues.
Gotcha.
And communication is always like
that
key, that, of course.
Definitely.
And trying to stay, you know, communicating across the board through the process. And then, you know, hopefully you don't end up in the position where you get a, where you wake up to a message from somebody from the opposite end of the planet saying, hey, we don't think this is working out. And I really was worried that, like, maybe I'm not going to recover from this and I'm just going to stay in my bed forever underneath my blanket and just, like, hide from the world and never mix and record another band ever again. You know, it's like,
it's hard. Your ego gets wrapped up. And, like, your
and your identity. Fear and your sadness, because you just, you fear the worst. And so what happens is you fear the worst, you envision the worst, and then you start fearing the worst as if it's actually happening in the real world. And it's like, nah, bro, just pull the fucking blanket back, get up and go in the room.
And the reality it, is no one cares. Like at that point, like especially when your mind is like,
nobody cares as much as you do about your bullshit that you're going through. It's that's the 100% truth. So it's up to us to wallow in that failure or fucking learn from it.
Just keep moving.
And keep moving. And I think that's really all the difference is between successful people and non-successful people, is literally just the successful people understand that the failures are part of it and they're going to come, but they're working to lower that number. You know what I mean? And eventually you get to the point to where your whole life is just kind of like set in a routine to where failure is not too much of an option anymore. And so when I start a process of recording a band, I don't just record bands and just get the process over as quick as possible just to get raw files into a computer. You know, it's like, okay, then I'll build the magic. The fucking magic happens from the beginning. The magic happens during practicing before you're even in the fucking studio. That's where the magic comes from. That's where all of the magic will begin to blossom from, because it starts from the pre-production. If the songs aren't fucking great, you can't expect it to make you feel super magical. It can't make you feel super happy and super excited or sad or whatever the emotion that you're trying to portray is. It doesn't matter. It's from the process of the very beginning, making sure that the songs are good. And then once you're going into the computer, man, just do those really tiny moves to make it sound good on the way in, and you cut yourself so much hassle. And you also add so much more clarity when you're not trying to completely overprocess something and just allow the band to speak for itself through some microphones. It's like, you know, I there's people who are like, you know, what kind of compressors do you have? What kind of EQs do you have? And I'm like, I got a badass workhorse server computer. I was like, they can just run, you know, a lot of CPU processing, and I have a badass fucking interface that records very clean, and I'm able to polish some stuff on the way in, and I can capture a vision from the very beginning, and that's where it begins from. It doesn't really change much from there. You're really enhancing. You're really just in trying to enhance it. So the band that I might have recorded recently, that is exactly what it was like. It was like day one, we were just handing out golden chocolate bars to each other and just like, yeah, this is going to be a fucking success from the beginning, but without even realizing it. We just showed up and was just like, let's do this as comfortably as possible. Nobody needs to stress. Like, we have the house to ourselves. We got money for food and we got a bang load of weed. Let's fucking kick it. And let's just love every part of the process. And that's the reason why it was like, that band's music was super easy to mix, was because you guys as them as musicians them as musicians were on top of it. So there was no fear. I don't really feel like, I mean, there might have been a little bit of nervousness, and definitely I think that Vinny was a little bit nervous, but man, he fucking killed it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, like, the whole process was good, you know. So that's what makes magic happen. Like, when people say, like, yo, how do you get that sound, man? And it's like, well, you know, it's just, it starts with the music. And they're mm-hmm. like, no, but, like, how do you get that sound, right. man? It's like, dude, it starts from the process, like, from the beginning. Yeah. You got to love every part of it. You got to massage and love and, like, just know that nobody is like, oh, I should have said no to this earlier. Mm-hmm. I honestly feel like everybody was just like, yeah, it's sick.
Yeah.
Well, people, and it's like what you're kind of describing is just, it starts with the music. It starts with, like you said, the practice before you even recording.
And how long and you guys practiced before y'all came in.
Yeah, and it's just what you're describing is just people that are passionate and serious coming together. You know, like, and that's those are the necessary ingredients, you know, like, because if the band is all there, maybe, like, the band is well practiced, the band is practiced and serious and all that, but then the producer is just kind of like, they're,
he's just a 9-to-5-er.
Yeah, exactly. Then yeah. you're not gonna get that yeah. spark. Like, yeah. it has to be, you have to find a producer that is
in it as much as you are.
Yeah, like yeah. you Kramer said, told, becomes a temporary member almost.
Kramer told me yeah. recently, he's like, I can't wait for the day. He's like, I'll be your engineer. He's like, and you're going to be Rick Rubin. I was like, you know, that wouldn't be too bad.
Rick Rubin is so fucking cool.
I would, dude. Rick Rubin, I know you're probably listening to this because you've listened to every other episode, but please, Mr. Rick Rubin, Strangled would love to do an EP with you. Hit me up.
But I would die if Rick Rubin was listening to this.
Sylvester Stallone's listening
to yeah. That was pretty good.
But
Wait, how'd you hear about the Sylvester interview? We were supposed to keep that on the DL.
Yeah. Oh, shit. I just seen your post-it note on the wall. it's on the fridge. But I don't know. Like I was saying, though, like, if I could not have to be an engineer, that would be cool, you know, to be a Rick Rubin type of thing, because he facilitates the magic.
Mm-hmm.
But I also really love the technical side. I really love the geeky part. I really mm-hmm. love plugins. I really love DAWs. I really love looking at waves. I really love that process too, because, I mean, dude, even as a kid, my mom loves to tell the story that I used to love to take apart the family computer. Like, I used to love to take that tower apart and put yeah. it back together. Sometimes I didn't put it back together right, and we had to hire the guy down in town, the local computer guy, to put it back together. But I love the whole technical part of it. Like, I love the science behind it. Like, when you think about it, it's just waves.
Mm-hmm.
All music is waves. All music is frequency and vibration. And, like, there's so many things that go into play with placing microphones and, like, technicality, of course.
In the room.
The room. The space. The reflection. How many inches the microphones are spaced from each other. Like, speakers only move two directions, in and out. You know what I mean? Forward mm-hmm. and backwards. So, like, everything has to be really good on the technical side. Otherwise, the magic is going to phase cancel itself out. So, like, yeah. It starts from the beginning, like I was saying earlier, and, you know, it's not like you could just jump in with this kind of vision that you have, that I have right now, you know, and think that it's just going to work. There's definitely a lot of practice of technique. Mm. There's a lot of trial and error of miking Joey. Like, when I met Joey, I was recording one of his bands, and then I recorded another one of his bands, and then another one of his bands, but he got to the point to where I was hitting him up constantly. Hey, I got an interface and some microphone cables and some microphones and, like, a little room. I guinea pigged recording with him for a long time.
Mm.
I wanted to get better. The first Strangled EP, he hates me because I made him re-record that whole EP probably 4 or 5 times. And dang. The fifth time was finally the one,
right.
because I got better and better at spacing my microphones and what microphones to use. And, you know what I mean? I was just trying a whole bunch of different stuff. But I'm finally, thank you to Joey and Kramer. Those two guys have really helped shape. Oh, and Skylar. Mm. I mean, Skylar has been a very big part in Slamnasium. So those three dudes, like, have definitely been the biggest help with my whole my whole thing, my whole recording thing, because each one of them taught me things. And Skylar, I recorded him so many times. I tried, you know, many different vocal chains and stuff, and then I got to the point and it was like, Skylar just sounds good going into a good microphone. And it was like, stop fucking with shit. Get his vocals just in, and he's going to sound good with what I do afterwards.
Yeah.
So I've learned from all these people, and I'm finally at the point now to where, like, I'm living really comfortably in my studio now, and it's like, I do know what bands I can't mention right now, but there's bands that I'm going to be recording later on this year, and there's a couple of bands that I'm going to be mixing this year, and a couple that I'm already mixing right now that are like, I never once thought I would ever get to this point to these, like, badass fucking people would trust me with their vision.
No, and you showed us, like, some of what you're working on, and, like, some of the people in groups, and, like, these are genre. These are, like, big players that are popular, yeah, that people are watching, and, like, they're super talented, like,
yeah,
crazy, like, you're talking about us, like, these are musicians on a level, on 2-3 levels higher,
yeah,
than definitely, any of us, you know? Yeah. So like, that's awesome. Like, you've
never really once thought that I would get to the scraps. But the thing is, I treat every project as if, like, I'm gonna die after I finish sending them their finals. Like, I'm gonna die in a car wreck at a stoplight. Tree's gonna fall. You know, it's gonna kill me. I'm gonna be dead. This will be my last one. Better make it fucking badass.
Yeah.
Better make it fucking awesome.
That's a great outlook to have, though.
I think
more people should try that.
But that's also, I mean, I'm also the kind of person that can, I may have been upset the night before, but the next morning whenever I wake up, like, it's a new day, it's a new chance, and it's a new chance to kick fucking ass in whatever you're doing. Because we just wake up, and then at night we go to sleep, and then the next day we start over. So, like, I treat it as, like, notebook. So, like, every day I'm turning a page. Every day I'm turning a page. It could be my last. It doesn't fucking matter. It's the past. Once it's over, it's done. I'm not worried too much about tomorrow. All I need to do is worry about today. And so, like, that also pertains to, like, to the recording process. Like, there's sometimes some bands that I'm recording, one member of the band that's a different instrument in the band will be like, you know, I'm really stoked about this and this and this and this. And I'm like, me too, dude. Like, I'm really stoked. But right now, let me get these drums ready. Yeah. Let me get these drums ready. We gonna knock them out. I was like, and then, you know, then we're gonna move on to that part. I was like, but I definitely want you to continue thinking about it.
Yeah,
just being present, being focused.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
is what you're describing.
Yeah,
and I appreciate that.
But there's only a few times that I've ever felt like I've ever had to say that, though. Like, usually a lot of the bands that I record is especially local too. Like, I mean, Omen's on top of their shit. Sledge is on top of their shit. Teef are on top of their shit. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like Strangled's on top of their shit. Like, when we get together and, you know, we're a bunch of dork doofuses that are just, you know, recording slam during the process. But we've basically just gotten it down to a, you know, a routine at this point. Yeah. Like, it's super easy for us to, like, just step in and do something really easy, really good, really clean on the way in, and it'll sound good afterwards. Because me and Joey have done this so much. Like, me and Joey have, like, recorded probably 100 songs together in the last 2 years.
Wow.
Yeah. Like, probably not that much.
Well, that's an exaggeration. But I mean, still, but it's got to be close, I'm sure.
A lot.
Yeah, yeah.
And
yeah,
how many renditions, and then how many, like, retakes of songs. Yeah. Like, hey, sorry, I accidentally stopped recording on this one part. Or how many times I've popped in and told Joey, oh shit, I'm so sorry, I forgot to arm the China channel. There was no China in any one of the last two songs. We got to go back and re-record.
We've experienced that with just the podcast alone already. Yeah. Like, just certain, like, maybe video is not captured or certain audio. Yeah, dude, it's all a process that you just have to keep doing over and over again.
Yeah, you take those lessons, like, you take those hits, and you're just like, oh, yep, okay, yep, next time.
Yeah. Yeah, but, I mean, that's just part of the process. You can't discredit the process.
Right.
It's just, man, you've had to fucking learn. Man, it's like, there's so many times the shit goes wrong, and you're just like, wow, I really fucking knew better. Like, I've been through this many, many, many times, and it's like, I needed to go through it just one more time, and then it's going to be burned into my brain. Maybe.
There's so much I want to, like, so many thoughts that were popping up, like, over your story. But, like, one thing in particular that we talked about with Vincent is, like, being a student. And, like, I'm definitely hearing that from you that, like, well, for one, obviously you got inspiration from a number of people, like, in your life. But that you were also, like, you were like, yo, let's get together and try something together. Or, like, hey, let me come over and, like, see your setup. Let me, like, how do you do this?
Yeah.
And just, it's, like, not like you're, like, oh, I'm looking for a mentor. Do you want to be my mentor? But it's just, like, you're excited. You have energy. You're, in a sense, participating. But you're also trying to take the lessons that you can learn from anyone that you can interact with that has any kind of similar interest.
And that's how I live my life.
Yeah, and it's just that energy that, like,
I'm trying to learn as much as I can, because if I have to live this life over again and I'm reincarnated into the next one, I need to have these lessons down. I ain't trying to go through this shit again. You know what I mean? Like, I just, with everything that I do, I'm just trying to learn. And I'm always trying to learn, no matter what it is. And I love, I never thought I'd say this, I love learning. I love learning. I love learning different things, and I love, just recently, within the last 3 or 4 years, I've really, you know, me and you have had this conversation, all three of us have had this conversation in the room, that, like, science has become one of the biggest things that, like, I've been trying to learn more about, and, like, world history is something that I've been trying to learn more and more about. I just got to the point to where I felt like I was just being lied to my whole life, or... There were certain really cool things in science that I could have been learning in school, but because of the Bible Belt area that I was at, I wasn't going to learn anything cool from it.
Yeah.
The world's 3,000 years old. That's it.
Right.
It's like, I don't know what y'all think. We just been here for 3,000 years. Yeah, no. And that's, I love learning. If I'm not listening to music podcasts, I'm listening to something science-y. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I'm learning something, or I'm listening to just people talk to each other, smart people, thought processes. And, you know, people don't realize, like, I feel like, you know, like, certain processes scientifically, like, also can be thought about emotionally, like, just things trying to explain each other. And it's all just basically teaching me how to become easier to my fellow human. Like, I just want to treat everybody as respectful as possible, and I just want to learn. Just want to learn and learn and learn. And it makes me better at engineering music, because, I mean, dude, there's so many podcasts I listen to where they talk about, like, yeah, like, there's a lot of psychiatry involved. Like, you piss off a singer during recording, he's not going to get any good takes. You can't sit there and tell a guy, like, dude, that was complete fucking ass. Like, right. Let's not keep that. Like, yeah. Let's do that as many times we need to until it's good. It's like, no. You tell him it was a great fucking take, and you want to get another one. You don't tear people down. You don't make people feel like shit during the process of getting something magical out. Like, that's like... that's like blowing up a rocket during its exit out of, you know, that Earth's atmosphere. It's like, what was the point then? You know what I mean? It was supposed to get all the way out there, and you killed it before it had a chance. Yeah, you're just destroying it on its way out. You don't do that to people. And there's so many times, like, I've seen these videos of, like, Ross Robinson, like, throwing shit at Slipknot during, you know, recording. And it's like, it was entertaining to watch. I'd never fucking do it. It was really fucking entertaining, you know.
Hey, but, you know, maybe there's something to that, you know. Like, there's people like you, there's people on your side of the spectrum that are like, hey, let's have good vibes, good time, let's make magic happen, make love, golden candy bars. But then maybe
there's a band that needs it.
Yeah, like the coach that's really hard or something like that. But it's up
to
me
to see those red flags from right, the beginning. Right.
I mean, I like your approach better, but you know, I think there's like something to the
maybe he had to match the vibe of Slipknot. Maybe they were giving him. I mean, think about
nine dudes
setting themselves on fire, bringing piss and shit to interviews,
and like jumping off of high rises and breaking their ankles.
Yeah, he's got a tough enough. He's got to match their like energy.
But like you said. I do completely respect it. I mean, I respect it. That's what it took to get the magic recorded like that. I mean, think about it. Slipknot was revolutionary.
Which album was did do you first remember? One. Okay, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, that's
because before they were still Slipknot, but they had that album Mate Feed Kill Repeat.
Mm-hmm.
It was like a different it was the same songs that came out on the self-titled, but they were different recordings and they sounded like shit. And I was like, damn, this is like a grind version of Slipknot, except not so badass grind. Because I love grind. But, yeah, I guess that's just what it took for them to get the magic. So, I mean, if a band comes to me and they're those kind of people, a lot of times people who just need somebody to beat the shit out of them in order to get the magic out, there's usually like drugs and alcohol involved, so that's definitely not something I would allow into my house. Considering if I had like a studio, I'd probably still not allow it. But like, it's just there's too much fear of like, you know, I'm trying to have them break shit.
Yeah, liability
like,
shit.
Exactly, and like insurance stuff, and like, say if I'm renting equipment to use it, I never want to rent equipment. Because I'm always worried that, like, I'm going to break it. So it's like if I had some people like that inside the studio where they needed somebody to beat their ass to get the magic out. It's just not for me.
Yeah. Seems more like a hassle.
I ain't got to tell Josh and Jacob a damn thing. They kick each other's ass during a recording. Like, I love recording vocalists that, like, give the performance during the recording. That makes sense. I mean, you're one of those people. Colton is one of those people. Skylar is one of those people he uses a mic stand, you know? Mm-hmm. And I'm always like, bro, why don't you just take it off? He's like, no, I want to use the mic stand. And he kills it. Mm-hmm. And then I have people like, you know, Colton and you and Josh and Jacob that like give the full in performance. I don't turn around. My back is turned to them. We're by ourselves in the room. And they have the whole space behind me to move. If they need to move, it's all part of getting that out. And if, you know, they throw themselves around and they throw themselves down and, you know, they do whatever they need to do.
Mm-hmm.
They need to get that emotion of whatever lyrics it was that they wrote in that moment. They got to get it out. Sometimes it pulls demons and not like literally, but you know what I mean? No, it just pulls the evil and darkness out of yourself. And sometimes people need the space and
air it out.
But they're scared to do that in real big fancy studios. Yeah. Like where it's really expensive and like an $18,000 microphone in front of them.
I resonate with that for sure.
I would love to have a big expensive studio, but it's like, it's not the kind of magic that I'm looking to make. Like my house setup is the setup that it needs to be. It's like, that's how I help bands get the magic out.
In a perfect world, do you think you would ever have like a studio, but it would just be in a second house if you could afford it ever?
It would be.
Have you ever thought about that?
It would be a one big house. Yeah. One wing of the house would be like cool studio room, live room.
Yeah.
That like the walls that separates it can lift up and then it becomes one big music venue.
That'd be sick.
Yeah, one day.
One day.
Make that happen.
Yeah. Well, it's the feeling right before you pass out and OD. So, in a way, we love how abrasive and abstract abrasive music is. So, there's just something we conditioned ourselves. We wanted something different at a certain point, and I feel like that birthed rock and roll in its early forms with blues and like like old blues musicians and you know the old African American musicians with the Muddy Shoals era.
Yeah,
you know?
and that was very dark music.
It was very dark music. Yeah. I mean, there's even like, you know, there's people in the metaphysical world that talk about, you know, blues guitarists and you know they talk about their deals with the devil. Like there's like it's very
It is a... It tickles the butthole of evil. And but at the same time, it's like... It's very... It's like playing with fire. I don't know how to explain it. In its true form, it was meant to sound evil and dark and, you know, very, very different from, you know, soft and sweet and gospel music that was, you know, that was taking over, you know, the entire music market. When music recording first became a thing, you know, a lot of the things that they were recording were a lot of gospel songs over and over again. Oh, Brother, Where Art Thou is like, is a perfect, you know, idea to think about. When they went in and record that song, I mean, gospel music was, they were tired of hearing it. They were wanting something new, something more energetic.
And more real, more authentic to the human experience. Mm-hmm.
Because it, real life isn't all fucking rainbows and unicorns.
Yeah.
These unicorns actually breathe fire, and their urine is acid. And it's like, you know, life isn't as beautiful and perfect as it looks. Yeah. And people got to the point to where they wanted to feel the more realness, and that's where I feel like rock and roll really came from. Mm-hmm. And then, like, it just it evolved. It evolved and evolved and evolved and evolved. Now we have bands like Epicardiectomy and Embryectomy and Analepsy.
And Sanguisugobob.
And Sanguisugobob. And, like, you have ridiculous trash can sounding snares. Really gunshot, pointy kick drums, chinas and bells and hi-hats, you know.
Pig squeals.
That's why I love Epicardiectomy. You know, people are like, oh my God, I can't believe the drummer has no toms. And it's like, he just removed them out of the picture because it didn't fit the music. Yeah. I fucking respect that.
If you don't use them, you don't need them.
You don't need them. He has a tiny 10-inch snare and a shit ton of bells, splashes, chinas, and hi-hats. And a kick, and that's it. Damn. And a snare, and like that's all you need, and I respect it. And it's like, it's super abrasive. People, I don't know, man, I just love really abrasive music with a bad mix. It's not even really that the mix is bad, it's just that's the way it needed to sound.
Well, yeah, and it's like your band Strangled is like, you know, you even openly describe, you use words like ignorant or like lowbrow or knuckle dragger.
Yeah.
Or just like that there's,
it's that real caveman shit.
Yeah, like you're bringing in darkness, but you're also bringing in like an intentional type of stupidity.
So,
or it's simplicity.
Party music. That's what it is. Like, I want to write riffs that you can mosh to, but you could also play in a strip club. You know what I'm saying? like I want to write party music, and I love party music. And like, I would think that like, if the movie Project X was a real thing, they'd have been blasting, you know what I mean, Circumvent from Strangled over the PA during the party. You know what I mean? It's every riff I write has a purpose. It's to make you feel like it's party time. And
but party time in the
very, in the ignorant sense.
Yeah.
And like, that is, I feel like that's the name of the genre, ignorant, you know what I mean? It's more than just slam. It's, there's no rules. There's no, oh my God, you need to have this verse, and then it needs to lead into a pre-chorus. And it's like, fuck that. Give me a blast until it's time to slash on that hi-hat. Just blah, blah, blah. Let's go into double bass with a ping. And it's like, it became a point to where there's so much slam in the world that like, some of it can be terrible, yeah, but it makes it more beautiful. Like, Disconformity and, like, Gorvent and all the Japanese bands, I love them because of their quality of their mix, and I think it sounds exactly the way it's supposed to. A lot of the Indonesian bands, like, that's another dream of mine. Like, I want to mix an Indonesian slam band. Like, those dude, they have it figured out. Somebody gave them the secret formula to slam, because this shit is fucking perfect.
I think that like kind of what you're describing when you talk about slam too, it's similar to trap, where trap is like a reversion.
Listen, slam is gangster rap. Okay. Nobody can tell me anything different.
Sorry. Let me backpedal that. I guess it's just a similar sentiment in that it's like a degradation from like quality, where you're purposely trying to simplify things,
yeah,
to like make a statement that's supposedly supposed to be more cool mm-hmm. than if you tried hard.
Mm-hmm. It just like the what's his name? The ancient Stoic said, you ain't cool unless you piss your pants. Like, it's like...
That's probably,
Socrates.
That's Cicero.
Plato. You ain't cool unless you piss your pants.
No, that sounds like a cynicism philosophy to me.
It's like it's a group of people making a style of music saying, fuck your pop music, we're going to make the complete opposite.
Mm.
And then it became a point to where we had heard that enough, then it just became like, hey, this is actually like kind of sick. Mm. Let's just keep going. And like...
Yeah, you develop it's just a taste crazy, for it.
Exactly. You develop taste a taste for it.
Evolves. And
next thing you know, you're putting Sriracha on top of like crazy riffs. And like, there's some stuff that is crazy wild. I think I might have showed y'all Bio Noise Generator.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's, there is no repetition. It's just like part after part after part after part that like has no time signature, doesn't really have a tempo. Mm. And it's like, I love it. I don't know what it is about it. Early Car Bomb stuff, like real crazy mathy stuff. Like, there's just
even like Sleep. Like, Josh, you're really into Sleep, and like that's a particular type of zone that people get into. That's like, it's not hard what you're playing, but it's hard that it's a 50-minute song, and you all are like staying in the same vibe.
Well, that's why I write Slam. Like, that shit's like minute and a half, 2 minutes, and then you're in, you're out. It's tactical. It's meant to make you move. Let's go ahead and move on to the next song. I've just got to the point to where I started cutting fat from songs, and they became way shorter.
Mm-hmm.
Like, man, you really don't have to have all the filler.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some genres, the filler is a big part of it because it's, maybe there's a lyrical part that like really means something, but it's like, I'm just trying to come in like a fucking tank,
right?
With like steamroller for hands with like a twisted metal clown head sticking out the top. Like, it just, it's gotta be ridiculously ignorant. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. you think about the crazy artwork in Slam. Like, I definitely don't agree with all the misogynistic parts of, like, you know, certain metal genres. I definitely get it. Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't give them praise.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, you know, there's some really good Slam out there. But, like, some stuff, like, gets really dark.
Mm.
Some stuff gets really dark and it's like, eh.
Yeah.
You know, I don't really listen to those kinds of bands, but there's a lot of really good shit Slam out there. Well, that fucking kicks ass.
So what would be your... Do you have a top three list of
bands or genre?
Your favorite Slam bands, like in your opinion, or is that too hard of a question?
I mean, it'd like make me choose 3 out of 10 of my toes. You know what I mean? I don't know how
that works. Yeah, we're gonna do that. We're talking about Hustle earlier.
Yeah,
oh, dude, get ready. Oh my god, no.
Let's see, 2 big ones, and I'll keep a pinky.
All right, so right now, probably one of the biggest Slam bands that I'm into. For sure. Digging Up from Indonesia. Fire as fuck.
Digging Up?
Mm-hmm.
I'm into that name. That's a sick name.
It's fire. My homie's band, Anal Stab Wound. That shit is fire. He did all the
instruments. Okay, Anal Stab Wound.
He's 15, too.
Yeah, the drummer is 15. Yeah. And
he is a fire-ass drummer. This kid is going to be... He's going to be fucking famous one day.
Weren't you saying he works with, like...
John Huber.
Huge, like, musicians already. Yeah, like, he's already just...
Yeah, his band, Anal Stab Wound, has, like...
Shouts out to Anal Stab Wound.
Shout out to Anal Stab Wound. Let's see. Okay. So, Anal Stab Wound would be a band I've been listening to. Digging Up is another band I've been listening to. Man, a lot of stuff I've been listening to lately are Slam bands that I'm mixing. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm doing a band called Casket Leakage that's fire. Another band I'm doing is Vile Impregnation, which is fire. It's got a dude in the Slam world from Cephalotripsy, Angel Ochoa. Like, I never thought I'd be sitting at my computer and I'd be mixing a song that would have like somebody that I've listened to so many times, like on a guest spot.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's so cool and awesome to me.
Mm.
So I've been listening to those and probably Cerebral Incubation. I listen to them every... I mean, I got the shirt on, bro. It says OG Caveman Slam on the back, but I'll show you later.
Nice.
It's like Cerebral Incubation is probably
one of my top three for sure.
Okay.
Forever. But, man, I don't know, man. It's like I said, trying to pick 3 out of 10 of my toes.
No, yeah, I mean, those are a lot of cool names.
Yeah, that's
I'm enlightened.
Cool. I mean, Digging Up's really cool. I think you'd like them. Cool. Check them out.
Yeah, yeah.
Sure. They did a split recently.
Yeah, I mean, I don't dip my toes in a slam much, but I can appreciate, I mean, I don't know. I can appreciate all types of metal just because I've played the music so much. Mm-hmm. I've heard the sound so much. It's like,
I mean, well, you just think have about
so
it.
Much reference.
I feel like even if you weren't listening to slam all the time, I think that I was really comfortable showing you guys some really, like, you know, ignorant ass slam.
Oh no. And I love to hear it.
And it's because yeah. It was like, I knew that y'all guys would probably appreciate it because, like, you know, the Tooth isn't really a band that you, like, listen to, like, at, like, prom. Right. You know what I'm saying? So it's like...
Or mini.
But we will play your prom.
Or mini public place. Yeah, that's the thing. We won't... You won't hear us ever in public places, but we will play any public place you want us to play for pretty much free.
Yo, yeah, we're just not asked.
Scissortail Park has that new stage. Like,
oh, we could play there.
Yeah. Let's go. Like, I've thought about, like, having Soto Slam Fest at the Scissortail Park because it's open.
That would be insane.
You know what I mean? Rather than having everybody inside. You know what I mean? Ooh. But it's like, man, if... out there in the sun in the middle of June might be too much.
Yeah, that would be a little bit too Oklahoma, I think.
Do it in,
yeah,
like March.
It'd be a mud pit.
We're gonna do it in winter.
Everyone's got coats and
everybody's got
ice skating across
Tim's.
It's either gonna be 70 degrees or there's gonna be ice, so
yeah. One or the other. It's Oklahoma, we'll figure it out. But no, I knew that showing you guys some, like, some abstract art slam, y'all guys would get it because, you know, the Tooth isn't very friendly with tempos and, you know, like, right, consistent 4-4. Right. And, like,
yeah,
like, that's why I love the Tooth. I feel like the Tooth is one of the bands that are, like, it wasn't really, I don't know if it was really a thought process for you guys from the very beginning to be like, yeah, we're not going to sound like, you know, like anything pop, like anything cool or like anything normal. Like, it's just, it needs to be chaotic and beautiful. I mean, that's the only really way to think about it. There was a band I recorded recently that the last song on their EP was a pretty fucking epic one. And it's like the whole first three songs of this EP were very punishing. And the fourth song was very punishing. And the way that it ends is so, you wouldn't think, listening to a lot of y'all guys' older stuff, I guess, you know, except for some parts, you know what I mean, like, of y'all guys' old albums. But, like, it's, y'all guys are amazing musicians to, like, write something so chaotic into something so beautiful.
Well, appreciate
it. Well, we can never live up to your compliment.
I'm going
to
give y'all guys that Soto Grammy. I'm going to have my own Grammys. It's going to call the Slammies.
The Slammy?
It's called the Slammies.
Please give me my Slammy.
What was the thing on the
I would love a Slammy.
What was the Office? What were those things called?
Oh, fuck. What were they called?
They used to have at the restaurant, remember?
A Dundee.
The Slam Dundies.
You're going to have it at the Soto Slam
Fest? At Slam Fest.
Yeah, hell yeah. That's
cool. Slam Fest would be awesome to fucking do again, but... Who knows?
So you were talking about, like, drawing inspiration from science a little bit earlier, and we've had some some pretty cosmic conversations.
We've had some conversations during recording where we're like, we gotta stop. Yeah. We gotta get this in the podcast. We gotta stop right here. Everybody, chill.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, I just listening to your whole entire story, like, I relate to it so much. And actually, I already wanted to say this, like, I think it's interesting, all three of us probably have very similar starting stories of how we just got excited about a certain sound.
Processes. Or, probably, we probably had the same kind of processes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and, you know, that there was key people that came along that we got inspired by, but eventually you kind of zero... At first, it starts very general. You know, I want to be in a band. I want to go to shows. Or I just want to be a part of this general scene.
Yeah.
And then you get more and more specific. And, like, for you, you know, you've zeroed in on this, like, music producer side, like, very specifically. And you have a unique balance with your job and your studio. And me, like, I've gone on a weird, circular journey where I'm like, now somehow this energy and inspiration for music is leading me into coding and like being an engineer and other stuff in Bitcoin and like Josh, you're producing this podcast and working on beats and playing in multiple bands and just like, I don't know, like it, you never know where these things are going to manifest because it's going to be something specific, but it's like every person, like you have your own kind of inclinations. Like I could never be a producer, but I'm so glad that you were able to like figure out the pathway to get there. And I don't know. So generally, I just think that's so cool to see these similar patterns across all these different people that I know and we talk to.
It's allowing yourself to be humble enough to be inspired by everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's exactly where I was kind of leading into
that. Not being too humble to where you're one of those like really weird people. You know, those people that are like, oh no, I'm not good enough at anything. It's like I was there at one point in time, but I had to like do chill. Right. Let's get some work done.
Yeah,
like, let's
do some things. Yeah, it's a very Eastern kind of way to approach it all.
Yeah,
and we've touched on that too with that same like I think just last episode too. Like.
And it's, man, I feel like, you know, Eastern practice, you know what I mean? And like things like Buddhism and stuff like, and teachings and stuff like that. It's basically just the way to live kind of thing. It's really, I'm not a religious person, nor do I like believe in certain things, but I believe that there was like, it's just a golden rule kind of thing. It's just morals kind of thing of like treating everybody equally and treating everybody with respect and not allow other people to feel like you're overpowering them because it's not your place. Mm-hmm. And it's not anybody else's place to overpower you. Mm-hmm. And, you know, capitalism has fucking, you know, like tried to change those rules into like, you know, certain people have the right to be overpowering other people. And it's like we're all just supposed to just live. And we're all supposed to just do something that makes us passionate. And we're all just supposed to pursue something in our own way, no matter what it is. For some people, and that's the thing. And it's allowing yourself, allowing other people to do it respectfully, whatever they're doing, and not allow yourself to make anybody else feel stupid for something they're pursuing kind of thing. Mm. So I love meeting people and learning about what they're doing with whatever they're doing in their lives. I'm one of those people that drive down the road and see somebody on the side of the street and my brain automatically goes to, I wonder what they're doing today. You know? Yeah. I'm like, I wonder if they're about to hit the gas station.
Or I wonder what they know. I wonder what they've been through.
I wonder what they've been through. I wonder why there's two other people in the car with them. I wonder where they're headed. I wonder if they're headed to do something really cool. I wonder if they're going to a funeral. You know, and it's like I'm also one of those dumb people in the world that I feel like it's dumb, I guess. But a lot of times when somebody is shitty and cuts you off in traffic, I'm one of those people that are just like, I really hope they had something really fucking important they were going to.
Yeah. I mean, that's a really good perspective.
Just giving more people the benefit of the doubt.
And yeah.
It's
or not allowing everyday people to control like
your emotions.
Yeah. Yeah,
with like control accidentally bumping shoulders with somebody on your way into the 7-Eleven while they're on their way out, and you're just like, man, fuck that guy. And then you get in your car, you know, like, well, fuck everything. And then it's like, then it's just a whole ball snowball of negativity.
Yeah,
and it's not needed, needed.
Well, and like you were saying earlier, I mean, music is just waves, just vibrations.
It's
like,
just push and pull.
Yeah, and I think you know this is it's super woo woo, but I think that there's like. I think that we really feel vibrations in a way more sensitive way, like our consciousness and a
physical way,
how we communicate, how we see each other's faces, how we kind of relate to each other's emotions and have theory of mind for how the other person is feeling. Like we just have such a deep, deep history of connecting with each other and connecting with the world and being conscious. And kind of just what you're describing is just an openness, a curiosity, and a humility for nature that like, damn, we're on this crazy ass ride. I don't quite know how this thing works, but
I'm going to take it a day at a time.
Yeah, I'm going to take it a day at a time. I have respect for the vibrations I'm putting out for I don't know what wakes
And I always got to be conscious that my mood and my emotions that I'm going through will affect the others and the people around me. And if I'm not careful, I could, if I'm in a negative mindset or mind state, I could accidentally be mean to somebody who it was really fucking uncalled for. And things like that, you know, keep me up at night. Mm. But like, it's trying to catch yourself before you unnecessarily accidentally hurt somebody else, you know? And it's just, I feel like it's just part of being a more conscious being, just being a more conscious person, trying to, you know, eyeing your surroundings and paying attention to the things that are around you and the things that are going on around you and the way that you are and your mood and your tone and the way that you're talking and what you say and how you ask somebody a question is done respectfully.
Yeah.
And it's, man, there's so many people that don't even fucking care about any of that. And they're just like, what the fuck's up? And like, how's the fuck it going? And like, I heard your mom died. And it's like, you know, it was unnecessary, dude. You know? Right. It's like, it's not how you approach people. It's like, there's people out there that just don't care about the other people around them.
Well, I think in our modern communication is producing a lot of that as well. A lot more of that that's been before. People
but are kind of deranged. Like we're not giving enough credit to the people that are out there actually making a change and doing things differently, like us. You know what I mean? Like, we treat people more equal. And it's not something that you see all the time because of, you know, it's just not what's sexy on the little black box in the living room. You know what I mean? It's like, it's not what's cool to society nowadays because everybody likes drama and everybody like being in each other's business and like, exploiting people's personal lives. And it's like, people are people.
Yeah. And they're never going to stop being people.
And they're never going to stop being people. And you're a fucking person too.
Yeah. See, and like, I'm out here, I'm trying to connect with people that are curious, that are building, that are open. And like, that's what I'm trying to do. And that are positive. And I'm not trying to ignore the negative things in the world. In fact, I'm trying to take responsibility in the unique way that I can. But it's also like, hey, I'm here with a positive attitude, rational optimist, and like, I'm trying to connect with other people like that. And that's a part of what this podcast is. You know, that's a part of the desire to play music.
And I definitely don't think any of this is boring.
Oh, I'm glad.
Good, yeah.
And you know, like that, what we're trying to fight is exactly, I think, the boring flow that a lot of people are stuck in. It's really like a negative, critical, self-critical, you know, like bleak kind of doomer outlook on the world.
And it's completely controllable too.
I mean, a lot of the people that change their outlook from feeling that way though, like a lot of people who dive into things, you know, that are a lot more woo-woo and metaphysical according to society. And a lot of those people that like take it upon themselves and to learn things about spirituality and like chakras and aligning, and it's like I was saying with music, is all vibration, push and pull. I mean, so are emotions. I mean, emotions are, you know, electrical signals in certain parts of your body causing a reaction. And it's like, it's, we're all just people.
Yeah. But we're antennas.
We're antennas. And I don't know. I forgot where I was even talking about. I told you it was going to happen if I spoke.
It happens to us all the time.
But
no, that's cool, man.
What were we talking about?
I'm loving it. We're talking about, I don't know, positive vibes.
Positive. Oh, yeah. Shit, that's man. What I was talking about.
Lining people, of chakras.
So people who take, and there is, I mean, dude, there's radicals in everything.
Yeah.
There's radicals in every religion, you know, that like completely manipulate things. And there's probably, you know, people like that in the metaphysical world, but it's like, man, it really is, a lot of it is science. And then it gets to a certain point to where we can't explain in science. And like, I feel like certain like really, really ancient things, like, you know, Buddhism and stuff like that, were trying to explain things to us, like on how we can connect with ourselves. You know what I mean? And it's all just, people are trying to fix their broken selves. You know, some people are trying to fix their broken selves of broken thinking that has been like burned and hurt by society from like, you're not good enough, and you know, you need to do better, and you need to do better, and you're not good enough right now. You know, people got tired of feeling that way and started looking within themselves and trying to learn more about the human consciousness. And like, I love that stuff. And I feel like, you know, I wasn't always this way that I am right now. You know, I'm 32. I've definitely had a lot of transitions of personality, and I've been through a lot of friend groups, and I've lived with a lot of friends, and I've buried a fuck ton of friends. And, you know, I've had to say goodbye to a lot of people's consciousness within my day that, like, it really hurts. And I try to find myself, and a lot of those things on the woo-woo side, it turned me into a better person.
Yeah.
And a lot of people who I feel like really all it takes is just learning a little bit about it. And then you get the idea behind it, and then you're able to apply it within your life. And, you know, whether it's woo-woo or not, I am out here doing something that I love, and I'm able to do it. This is my version of success. Yeah, I'm not making ridiculous money. No, I'm not making a bunch of money from recording. If recording was all about money to me, it wouldn't be as fulfilling. It would be a job. I got a job. You know, I got a job that can pay my bills and pay my rent and buy us food and buy me weed and, you know, buy me gear sometimes. But like, music is just producing and engineering and mixing and mastering is just, man, that's the icing on the cake. You know what I mean? It's like, that's the fun part of my passion, because I'm very passionate about being a husband and being a father, you know, and I am passionate about being a painter. But man, we can all say as musicians, like, music does something to us that we can't explain.
Well, it's deeply embedded in us, and you know, you're talking about all of this Eastern philosophy, for example, and I think that whatever religion or philosophy or belief you have, you know, I think there's truth in all of these, especially the ones that have lasted long, as long as they have. And it's like the religion or the practice around it is almost the dressing. It's the narrative or story that helps transport it across time. And so it's the dressing, the costume of it isn't the truth. The truth is what you can find through practicing it. And for me, like, meditation has been a huge part of my journey the last 3 years. And one of the most prominent things I've noticed from meditation is that my brain produces music constantly.
Hell yeah.
Like, it, when you start to notice your thoughts, like, my riffs emerge out of my subconscious every day, and songs and acoustic songs. And like, there are very specific things for me that...
Do you just hear the sound? Is there a visual behind it?
Is there what?
Is there a visual behind it?
No, it's usually sounds and words.
See, so for
it's
me,
sounds and lyrics.
For me, it's visualization with the sound. I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Others have been a lot of songs that have started for me where I was sitting in the middle of the day and I pictured myself holding my guitar, playing my guitar rig, and whatever riff I was playing in that moment, or, I mean, it sounds woo-woo too, but like, I've had dreams before where there was riffs and I ended up turning those riffs into songs.
And no, I've actually the exact same thing. Like, I've had dreams where I've played stuff.
Now that
is
your...
And it just felt so real.
That's your subconscious affecting reality.
Yeah.
You know? It's wild.
But then it's the reality
It's magic shit.
It's the reality you expose yourself to in the first place that creates that subconscious that can then produce new ideas. And, like, that's just what I've realized is, like, okay, there's music is deeply embedded in me. It's when it comes out of me, it feels natural. It feels magical. I don't need to explain that. It's just that is, that will always be a part of me. Maybe not, but as long as it comes out and I enjoy it, it will be a part of me. And like, I don't know, just a simple realization as that is. But yeah, I mean, you know, just echoing what you're saying, that the fruits of getting into these, you know, self-reflective practices are great.
Imagine if those AIs that y'all were talking about on that podcast try to write a slam song.
Dude, no, I mean, you're really insane. Not ready for the quality of slam that AI is going to be able to make.
But are they going to unedit the drums? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
that's
are they
the thing.
Make
like,
the drums sound
Here's the thing is that it's the highest, because you could imagine, okay, I could, you and me, Michael, we could collaborate. Let's try and make a program that, you know, produces good slam songs. And we could collaborate and just, like, think of, like, a really solid formula for doing it. But at the end of the day, what would really come to make that great is your specific knowledge, my specific knowledge, stuff that can't be taught, stuff that can't be put into words or put into code. Mm-hmm. And that's where humans... That's where the AI isn't coming close to us anytime soon. Like, there is a high level of creativity at the peak of the pyramid that we embody that we don't even understand
yet. It's because I feel like it has a grid, and I feel like human consciousness works off grid. You know what I mean?
Like, there is off our grid of understanding.
Yeah.
For sure.
Exactly. I do think that we'll eventually reach a point to where, I mean, like Neuralink and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But, like, at the same time, like, I don't feel like a CPU can rip. And I don't mean that as in, like, a general CPU. I mean, like, even a, you know, like a smart, crazy AI computer will never be able to give us the dirtiness. They'll never be able to give us that grind and that abrasive. Mm-hmm. It's going to sound fire, but it's probably going to be too perfect.
Be polished, cut perfectly, like everything. Yeah,
like you just followed a list of okay, it's got to have this, and this, and it's like formulas don't work that great like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's there would always be something missing, and that's kind of where we are with that stuff. It seems like to me, but nonetheless, I echo and yell to everyone. Do you not think
Let me ask: do you think there's anything missing in music these days?
Missing in music?
Or do you feel like music is having a revolution of feelings again?
I just think that we haven't utilized technology with music enough. Like, we're very, very early with doing that. I think you see early parts of this with these strange montages that people make, or very specific vibe videos or whatever. You know, I think that eventually music is going to combine with many of these other mediums, and there will be crazy VR music experiences that are much more intense and that can communicate with a higher throughput, you know, just a higher bandwidth of emotion or vibration.
We did see a lot of bands doing unique, like, streaming, like bigger bands, especially in the metal, like, scene. And
what do you think the future of music is?
The future of music?
Like the cantina from Star Wars? You know, talking about the cantina band?
Yeah, yeah. I've often wondered that if like... Well, and I really think it's going to be unique to see what happens to metal in, like, 50 years, 40 years. You know, like, what happens when we're old? You know, like, old as fuck. And it's like...
There's no way to know. It's like we were talking about earlier with quantum science. That's just theory with another theory with another theory with another theory. Is the same way I think about with the evolution of heavy music. Is just, it's just mitosis of genres, of genres coming together, splitting, coming together and splitting, and coming together and splitting. And people are taking a bunch of elements from a bunch of different genres, and that's literally like what music has been. And that's like when you think about like the birth of slam, like it at one point in time it was like OG slam, and then it became true slam, and then it became like the new wave of slam, and then like it became a thing called slamcore, and
the
then
it became evolution of
it's
it
just
all.
It and it's all just different renditions, and it's like, it's crazy to think there's no way for us to have any fucking idea of what the possibility of slam's evolution in the next 10 years is going to be like,
or any genre.
And who knows, what if bands like the bands that I'm starting, and my friends and my bands who also have other slam bands are starting, what if we accidentally become the next rendition of slam in the next 5 years?
Right.
Or the next 5 years, like, what if the sound that we just call shit slam right now, because it's like so low IQ, low quality slam, but it's, what if that ends up becoming the evolution in 5 years? You know, we really don't know. And that's cool.
I want us to like analyze this episode and see how many times the word slam has been said.
I think everybody should have to take a shot.
Either a shot or a hit of your joint or something.
Eat
an edible every time.
Sorry, Josh. To answer your question, though, I do have a real answer. You're asking, like, what does the future music look like? I mean, an idea that I've thought about a lot as just someone that thinks a lot about software and internet is I want to see when we can have asynchronous live music collaboration over the internet on demand, like Zoom. And I even imagine, so we have stuff like...
Okay, so that is already a thing.
Really?
Yeah.
With what?
So a new program called Audio Movers. There's a couple of more new programs through the pandemic. And man, I really don't want this to sound like wrong at all. But like during the pandemic, we've actually came up, people have like fixed some issues with the world.
Yeah.
And one of the things, you know, in the music world,
I don't think enough people are talking about that. Sorry, I don't think enough people are talking about it at all. But
there's a lot of really important things that have changed throughout this pandemic that I think is actually, people are like, oh, the world is never going to be the same. And it's like, you know, good.
Yeah.
There's a lot of things that we fix, you know, like it's about fucking time people figured out that you don't need to go into a college facility to go through the college courses. And they've made it a lot more open for some people to do it at home. Mm-hmm. But like, you know, one of the, some really great things in the music world is, you know, people have developed an ability to, they have fixed the issue of latency. I have no fucking idea how you can fix the issue of latency from opposite sides of the planet or just in opposite parts of the planet to begin with. Mm. But they said they have fixed it. And it all starts with, I think this, it's a process. So they all, so maybe it's like this, I don't know, but if you put the drummer on a click and the drummer is playing to a backing track, by the time everybody else gets to the track, gets to everybody else, they're hearing it in real time.
You can just perfectly account for the latency?
But it takes one person in the band maybe to be the timekeeper, and by the time everybody gets it, then it's, you know what I mean? Like Vinny would be playing along to the music in his headphones but wouldn't hear any of y'all, and y'all would just be playing to his signal.
Gotcha.
So it's just a little tiny, like, really simple thing, but it's like that made a loophole and like a jump though. But like go back to what you're saying though.
where I saw this coming to its end, and that's awesome to hear. I had heard previously, like, an even earlier version of this is like almost like a DJ, like you play together, like make a song together type of like little apps and games. But where I see this going, you know, you have some stuff like Rocksmith on Steam, or it's like you can hook up a real guitar in your computer and play along with the software and learn songs. And, you know, I want to see like live global matchmaking, you know, for you're randomly meeting up with other musicians and you're live playing asynchronously over the computer. And you imagine how kids grind video games, you know, and grind match after match. They're going to be playing instruments and collaborating with other people and learning with other people across the internet, hearing new sounds, and just, you know, I think that's just the first, that's what I can only imagine at this moment. But I think from there, you bring that into VR, you bring other arts and mediums into that, and, you know, it becomes a whole new experience we can't even imagine.
I think one of the new waves, I think, that is really going to take over, I really hope so, because I want to go on record and say I want to mix the first Slam album 5.1.
In space.
Well, no, not in space, but in 5.1 surround.
Yeah.
So one of the most amazing things ever was I was in a movie theater just not recently, but it was a couple months ago. I don't remember which movie it was I went to go see, but it was a Travis Scott music video mixed for the theater. And it was mixed in the surround format. And it was sick. Like,
I can imagine.
There was elements of the mix and the song that were playing in certain corners. Wow. And I started thinking about this, and my brain has been going off and on and on and on. So I've been thinking about how I can mix the first Slam album in 5.1, but I need the setup.
Yeah.
The people listening to it would need to have a setup.
Dude, you need to have a theater, too. Well, I mean, and this reminds me of EDM. Like, one big thing with EDM and why people love it is the live aspect, where they have these huge stages and there's the lights and, of course, everyone's on drugs, and the pounding beat and how you feel it. But, like, you know, you imagine going into a dark theater with just lights and listening to 5.1 slam.
Bro,
I mean, that would be an experience.
I've already thought about the painting of cymbals, like, in the 5.1, like,
yeah.
Like, I've already thought about guitars, where the vocals are going to sit. Dude, I've thought about, like, vocals in front of you, and then, you know, then you get the stereo vocals behind you.
Yeah.
And it's like, it becomes like a trifecta of sound, like a triangle. One directly in front of you, two behind you, of vocals for one big epic part. Like, I've been wanting to do this for so long, but I don't have the way to, like, mix anything in 5.1. I don't know shit about it. You know, I just know that it's certain placement. And I've seen videos. You're basically using an algorithm that is a cube, and you just, you know, set things. And within that cube, forward and back, up and down, you know, just basic 3D. And you just spatially put things, and I want to try it. But I don't know where... how heavy I can compress stuff and like what it's going to sound like afterwards. And that's another thing I think is the future is 5.1 music.
That's crazy. I didn't even think about that, that they like to program that. They literally have a virtual 3D space that they're like, okay, we're going to have input output source here and here and here. And we're going
to speaker systems are from the $50,000 to $60,000 to $70,000 range for the basic package.
Fuck,
$100,000 to $200,000. I'm pretty sure like the Amphion setup is like $120,000. That's a lot of fucking money.
Yeah, yeah, man.
Just for me to record some shit slam from Indonesia.
You know what I'm saying? Digging up. Let's do it.
Yeah.
1.1.
Yeah.
Get up my boy Michael once he gets six figures.
One of these days. Yeah, one I'm going to be a millionaire from Slam.
That would be fucking badass.
I mean, that would be cool.
But hey, anything's possible in the future. Yeah. Who knows what the real addressable market of Slam it is in the world. Mm-hmm. It could be, you know, a million people, 10 million people in the world.
My fear, 50. Of course, is people are going to end up trying to use slam parts for pop songs. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't it always really happens
somehow. It always, always somehow happens.
Like there's going to be some gutturals some in kind K-pop. Of music. Yeah. I don't know. But, you know, there'll still be us slam elitists out there like, no, it sounds better when it's low IQ, knuckle dragon, caveman shit. You know?
Like, what if Baby Metal releases a slam?
I mean, Baby Metal got them riffs, though.
They do.
They have a badass drummer.
They do.
Yeah, Baby Metal is sick.
Baby Metal is sick. Do you have anything coming up?
I want to give a shout out to Ray Ray and Big Steve from the barbecue joint down the street from my house. Coming in clutch. That fire ass chicken and that lemonade is fucking amazing.
Hell yeah.
And the China house down the street. Fire. I want to thank the Wave Dispensary for all the times they hooked me up with weed whenever I had bands over. And we just get really, really stoned and made magic.
Did we smoke some of the Wave Dispensary?
Yeah. I want to give a shout out to Swisher Sweet.
Hey, if you're trying to sponsor a podcast, hit us up.
Shit. If Swisher Sweet is trying to sponsor a producer, I'm your boy. I got stacks of them sticks.
Honestly, your desk could be a Swisher ad.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, sometimes. Yeah. So
I hate when people are like, oh man, you smoke around your equipment. Shut the fuck up. That's why I bought it. It's like, man, it's a studio. We gonna smoke. Like, oh shit, what about alcohol? Hell to the no. Yeah. We don't do alcohol. We got
standards out here, man.
Yeah, we got standards out here. And you gotta worry about weed spilling into my interface and burning it up. You know what
there
I mean?
You go.
Or falling onto a speaker.
On the keyboard or some shit.
Exactly.
Sticky keyboard.
We just smoke. But yeah. All right, serious note. I do want to thank, like, the bands that have given me a chance to just work on their magic. Like, I'm completely forever grateful for it, and I love listening to an album that I did with a band and feeling all those memories all over again. That's why I always want to finish one, you know? But, like, you know, Sledge, Omen, The Tooth, and Agony, and my bands... Like, in my local friends, bands that I've all done, Xerophthalmia, like, everybody has helped me get to the point to where I am now. And I'm completely indebted everybody to allow me to make some mistakes on their stuff and learn from it. And everybody end up with something that they love, of course, in the end. And probably biggest shout out to Kramer for being my right-hand dude. Big shout out for Joey for allowing me to record him so many fucking times. big shout out to Skylar, you know, to come into me to record all of his projects. Because when Skylar ends up replacing James Hetfield in Metallica, like, I'm gonna be like, bro, you got to get me in. Like, let's get some shit recorded. I'm trying to see that budget from the label. You know what I'm saying? But yeah, everybody doesn't, nobody knows this yet, but Skylar is going to be the new vocalist for Metallica.
Hell yeah.
It's going to be the shit. 2030. Metallica money. But really, you know, and the Tooth, you guys have really showed me what it's like to do a badass session that kicked ass the whole fucking way. It was so easy. So easy.
You were super easy to work with too.
And that's how I want to be. I want to be easy to work with. And everybody just to enjoy, but it's really not all about me. It's all about the bands that I've worked with, because it means a lot to me, but it doesn't mean everything to me.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Like you know, how well an album does with a band, like, it does matter. Mm. It does matter, but it's not everything to me, because I don't want to allow it to cloud the magic. And it's like, I would totally do 10 more albums with The Tooth. I would totally do 10 more albums with Sledge and Omen. You know what I mean? Like, I'm probably going to do 10 more albums with Strangle and Aberrant Construct and all my other bands. Shout out to Cook and Crank with Uncle Fester. This is my grind band. Shout out to Frosty the Snowman, Lil Pee Pee Mane, Whisper Mane, and Big Verb. And yeah, that's about it.
Well, we're thankful for you, Michael.
Yeah, thank you for coming on, dude.
You guys.
Thanks for being on.
Okay, bye.